Ugh! Frank cried as Covey shoved him into the tool bench. What the fuck is going on? Covey barked. Frank collapsed into Covey's shoulder, trying to hug him. But Covey pushed him off, shoving him again. The tools on the bench rattled. Talk now! It's an addiction. It's not my fault. I like sex, and that's all it was, I swear. I gulped. What's he talking about, Covey? If Frank had raped Wynne. Red coated my vision, and it took every ounce of strength to stand here and not move. Who? Covey asked. Lily Green? The guilt in Frank's eyes was answer enough. We kept it a secret. They were all secrets. We'd meet out of town at a hotel, have some fun. That was it. Sex. They wanted it as much as I did. What did you do to them? The words were hard to form through my clenched jaw. Nothing. I didn't do anything. Frank's eyes searched Covey's. You need to believe me. I didn't do anything. I wouldn't have hurt them. They're dead. Covey spat. I know they're fucking dead. Frank's roar filled the garage, bouncing off every surface. Tell me. Covey shook Frank again. Tell me, where is Wynne? She shouldn't have asked so many questions. That statement had me flying across the room, ripping Frank out of Covey's grip. What did you do to her? Nothing. He gulped, and there was real fear in his eyes. Because I would murder this motherfucker, and he knew it. I wouldn't hurt her. Then where the fuck is she? I bellowed. The stench of whiskey on his breath was overpowering as he lost it, breaking down into a fit of sobs. When I dropped him, he collapsed to his knees. Where's Rain? Covey asked him. Frank didn't answer. He buried his face in his hands and cried. Covey bolted for the door that led to the house, whipping it open. Rain! There was no answer. He came back and scanned the empty space. Her Jeep is gone. Maybe she's shopping. Let's call her, see if she knows where he might have taken Winnie. The sound of the river grew louder as Covey went for his phone. The river. The mental image of Frank holding Wynne's head beneath the water exploded in my head. Her lungs filling with water. Her lifeless body floating downstream. I squeezed my eyes shut, willing the picture away. When I opened them, they landed on the safe in the corner. Maybe Frank had taken out a pistol. Maybe he'd pressed the barrel to her head. My stomach roiled. I told her not to do it this time. Frank's babble tore through my brain. What? I told her not this time. That it was different, but Winnie knew. She's too smart. She's always been too smart. Wait, I held up a hand. You told who not to do what? His whisper was barely audible. Rain.
Chapter 22. Winslow. The blood trail coating half of my face made opening both eyes almost impossible. With my hands bound behind my back, there was no way to wipe my eyelid clean. Every blink was sticky, every breath strained, every step excruciating. Rain, shh! She poked her knife at the gash in my head. The metal tip barely made contact with my flesh, but even the graze was enough to send me to the dirt. The crack of my knees against the rocks rang through my bones like the vibration of a bell, but instead of a beautiful chime, it was agony, sheer agony. My head spun in a dizzy circle, like a spinning top the moment before it collapsed. Blackness tickled at the edges of my consciousness, but I shoved it away, forcing a breath into my lungs. Breathe. I'd had the wind knocked out of me countless times in physical training or karate. I'd strained muscles and earned thousands of bruises. But this was my first concussion. Each move was sluggish, and all I wanted was to sleep, just for a minute. I leaned forward, the ground beckoning, and twisted enough so that when I dropped, I hit my shoulder and not my face. Wrong move. The second I crashed, pain ripped through my arm. Either my shoulder was dislocated, or I had a fractured bone. When I'd been unconscious, Rain had done something to my arm. Maybe when she and Frank had been loading me in the Jeep, she'd dropped me. Maybe she'd stomped on me or used the meat mallet again. Something was definitely wrong because my muscles didn't want to work right, and any strength in my left hand was gone, stolen by the ache. But before I could close my eyes and succumb to the dark, Rain's knife was back, the tip digging into the smooth skin at my neck. Pain had a way of cutting through the haze. Up, she gripped my elbow and forced me to my feet. I swallowed the urge to puke as I stood. Please, shh. She shoved me up the trail. Walk. One foot in front of the other, I rushed nothing. For every step, I took two breaths. Think, Wynn. My brain didn't want to think. My brain wanted to sleep. Wake up. Fight. Why are you doing this? Stop talking. Rain, please. She lifted the knife to my head, to the place where the blood felt thickest. Quiet. I clamped my mouth shut and nodded, taking another step. Up and up Indigo Ridge. To the end. Was this how Lily Green had died? Forced to make this miserable climb? Was this the path that Harmony Heart had walked too? What about the others? It hadn't been suicide. I was right. All this time, my instincts had been pushing me to this conclusion. But those same instincts had failed me too. They'd failed me for not suspecting Frank, for not seeing the monsters who'd lived next door. Now it was too late. The sky was the purest of navy blues above my head. The stars appeared to be dancing in a dizzy circle, but it was my fuzzy head playing tricks on me. The one spinning was me. Rain had slammed that meat tenderizer into my skull, and in a blink, there'd only been black. I hadn't even raised an arm to block the strike. I'd be disappointed in myself later, if I survived this. That had to have been hours ago. I'd woken in the back of her Jeep at the base of the ridge. When she'd waved a vial of smelling salts under my nostrils, only the faintest of golden glows had been left on the horizon. The light was nearly gone now, and there was just enough moonlight to see the narrow trail that loomed ahead. Rain didn't relent for a moment. She pushed me up that trail step by step. My lungs were on fire and my legs burned. She breathed like she was lounging on a couch, not hiking to the apex of a cliff. Rain. How had it come to this? Who was she? The pain in my heart made this all so much harder to believe. I thought you loved me, I whispered. Loved you? She scoffed. Liked you, yes. You go too far with using that word. You're like my cheating husband, always spouting words of love. He loved them? He was obsessed with them, leaving them notes, arranging their secret rendezvous. Even when he promised me he'd stop, he didn't. So this is his punishment. You could divorce him. That's too kind. Did you know this used to be one of his favorite hiking spots? He proposed to me here. Now he can hike this ridge and think about what he's done, about what he's made me do. I never touched Frank. No, you asked questions. She shoved my elbow, nearly knocking me off balance. You should have let it go. They got what they deserved. So did he. And it could have ended there if you had done what everyone else in this goddamn town has done for years and believed what you were supposed to believe. That these girls, at least some of them, had killed themselves. And yes, everyone had simply believed. I told him to stop this. Rain's seething words seemed more for herself than for me. I told him the last time had to be the last time or I'd bring him up here next. If you want to take me to town and collect him instead, I won't argue. She laughed, the musical, sweet laugh that I'd known since childhood. It sent a chill up my spine. Keep going, Winnie. Rain, please, don't beg. It doesn't suit you. I gritted my teeth and took another step, then another before I stopped. Why was I making this easy on her? Screw this bitch. With a smirk at my lips, I dropped to my knees, the pain unbearable, but I grunted through it. Then I shifted and sat on my ass. What are you doing? Taking a breather. I lifted one shoulder, stretching my neck in an attempt to wipe some of the blood off my face. It hurt like a mother, but when I straightened, there was a red smear on the strap of my white tank. Get up, she barked. No thanks, I'm good here. My head throbbed, but my focus was sharpening. I let it wake me up. I let it push me to fight. At the dojo where I'd trained in Bozeman, my senseis, Cole included, had always said the best way to learn was to face an opponent better than you. Rain was better positioned. She had the knife. I had a concussion. But I couldn't lose this fight. I couldn't die on this ridge. Get up. Rain kicked my ankle, the sole of her hiking boot scraping the skin raw. I winced, took that pain and added it to the rest, embracing it as fuel. No, I will kill you here. And drag me the rest of the way? I huffed. Even a rookie cop would be able to tell that my body was dragged. So unless you want everyone in the county to start asking the questions I've been asking for months about these alleged suicides, no, you won't kill me here. The air was lodged in my lungs as I waited for her to respond. A bold move, asserting myself. But at this point, what did I have to lose? Griffin. I would lose Griffin. Find me, Griff. When I didn't show up for dinner, he would go looking, right? He'd find my car. He'd ask Pops. Hopefully they'd go to Frank's place and see through that bastard's bullshit. Griffin had been right about Frank, and I'd been too clouded by family history to see the lies. Did you put Harmony's purse and Lily's wallet on the trail for Briggs to find? Rain kicked my hip, and it took every ounce of my willpower not to cry out. Get up. Or maybe you put them out there for me to find, hoping that I'd think Briggs had killed them. I shifted as I spoke, so my body would shield my hands. The dirt was like sandpaper against my fingertips as I clawed at the ground, searching for a sharp rock or edge that I might be able to use to break the zip tie at my wrists. Cops preferred cuffs because even behind the back, a person could break the ties. All you had to do was make some space and slam down hard. But I couldn't lift my shoulder, not with enough strength to break the tie. It almost worked. I did suspect him. But you did nothing. You didn't leave me enough evidence. I sneered at her and the trail. The spot where I'd plopped down was smooth. Up. Now. Another kick. Another wince. But otherwise, I didn't move. Did you hit them over the head like you hit me? Was that how you got them out here? Shut up. I didn't find any blood around Lily's car. No signs of a struggle. What did you do? Trick her into thinking she was meeting Frank? Rain's glare narrowed. Stop asking questions. That's a yes, I muttered. Let me guess. You wrote a note. You said that's how Frank contacted them. Which was why I hadn't found anything in Lily's text and call history. Lily came out to the country expecting Frank. Maybe you promised a little late-night stargazing, a romantic picnic, and shut up! The knife's blade glinted silver as it whipped out and slashed through my bicep. My cry was swallowed up in the night. There was no one but her to see the tears, so I let them fall. Angry, desperate tears, but I would not be silenced. Not tonight. You hit them like you hit me. That was why there weren't any traces of drugs in their system. Any injuries caused by her knife or a wound to the head like mine had been covered up by the sheer brutality of their deaths. When all that remained of a person's skull were fragments, piecing them together to see a prior injury was nearly impossible. Did you make her walk up the trail too? When did she take off her boots? Why do you care? Tell me. Before we end this, the least you can do is give me the truth. Her lip curled. She kept slipping in those boots. You should have left them on her feet. She nudged my tennis shoe. I'll fix that mistake with you. Good luck, I deadpanned. No one will believe I committed suicide. You've had such a hard time, though, haven't you? Struggling to fit in, that awful breakup with your fiancé. The folks at the station have been unwelcome at best. You're alone, and rumor is that Griffin Eden is about to dump you too. He's been in love with Emily Nelson for years. I scoffed. I hadn't heard that one yet, but I had no doubt that rumor had been started by Emily herself. Oh, I'll concede that Emily is a fool, but she's been after Griffin for a long, long time. There will be some people in town who will believe she's finally caught his eye for good. Combine that with the tragic death of your parents, and it's no wonder you've been so depressed. It's a stretch. Too big of a stretch. I've been stretching for years. I looked up and met her cunning gaze. It didn't work with me. Almost. It would have worked on Tom Smith. But Tom Smith isn't the chief. I jutted out my chin. I am, and I will see you rot in a prison cell for this, for those girls. However many she'd killed. The knife shook in Rain's hand. I will kill you here. I will drag you if I must. Fine. Her hand came to my hair, bunching it in her fist. True to her word, she began to drag. The pain was excruciating, and I screamed again, the sound so raw and brutal it ripped through my throat just as a clump of hair tore loose. Stop! Tears clouded my vision as my limbs shook. I'll walk. That only made her pull harder. I'll walk! It took Rain a moment to let go, and when her fingers peeled free from my hair, the relief drew another flood of tears. I staggered to my feet, my head spinning worse than it had before. The trail was wider here than it was in most places, but it was still narrow. Maybe she wouldn't have to push me over the edge. Maybe the gash in my scalp and these unsteady feet would kill me for her. God, if I did fall, I hoped Griffin wouldn't find me. I didn't want my broken body, my death, to haunt his nightmares. Move, Rain commanded, the knife by her side. Its blade dripped with my blood. I started the climb, glancing over my shoulder once. I could run. It wouldn't be easy with my hands tied, but I could race her down this ridge. Maybe if I bought myself enough time, someone would come searching. You'll never outrun me, Rain said, reading my thoughts. She moved to stand behind me, blocking any attempt to escape. If I tried to bowl her over, I'd probably trip and roll down the trail. Step by step, Rain urged me forward. Her knife bit into the small of my back when I didn't move fast enough. She'd have to cut my wrists free at some point, right? If she wanted this to look like a suicide, she couldn't keep my hands bound. She must not have bound Lily's at all, because there'd been no tie marks. The cuts on my wrists from the ties stung and throbbed. I'd pulled hard enough for them to dig in, just not break. It was a small comfort knowing that I'd fought enough for my corpse to raise more questions. Maybe she'd climb down after pushing me off the cliff and cut the ties then. Before? Please let her cut them before. That would be my only chance to fight. It wouldn't be much of an opening, but it would likely be the only one. The trail curved, and with it, my stomach twisted. The top was near. Except getting there was going to be a bit more difficult. Griffin had blockaded the trail. I laughed when I spotted the fence. It was tall and sturdy. The only way past was to climb over the top. When had he done this? If I survived this night, I'd kiss him for it. I'd kiss him for the rest of my life. What is this? Rain spat the words as she took in the freshly dug fence posts and braces between them. A gift from Griffin. She studied it, looking it up and down. Go. Where? Over. The knife jabbed my bicep. Climb it. There's barbed wire at the top. Rain didn't give a shit if I cut myself to pieces, but she'd have to climb this too. She looked forward, then behind us. Go. Up. I opened my mouth to refuse, but past her shoulder a flicker of light broke through the night. She followed my gaze, her own widening. Help! I screamed.
Winslow!
Briggs. He was coming this way from the trail that led to the cabin. The light must be a flashlight.
Shut up!
Rain lifted the knife to my throat.
Go down!
I didn't argue as she shoved me back the way we'd come. Down was a move in the right direction. She pushed and pushed so fast we were practically jogging. When we passed the place where the two trails merged, her knife stayed on my pulse, its blade slicing tiny cuts into my skin. Faster, she hissed. I searched frantically for Briggs's light. It was on the trail, but he was still yards away, too far to stop us as we passed. He'd be chasing us down the mountain. My knees ached as she pushed, and I braced each time my heel landed, worried the last shreds of my strength would unravel and I'd fall forward. Stop. Rain's hand wrapped around my elbow. Her gaze whipped behind us, checking to see if we were alone. So focused on jogging forward, I hadn't kept track of where we were on the trail. The slope beside us was the steepest along this path except for the cliff itself. The face wasn't a sheer wall of rock like it was at the top, but the vertical drop was enough to make my stomach plummet. Bushes cluttered the slope, their leaves gray against the growing moonlight. They'd hurt, but they probably wouldn't kill me. No, it would be the rocks hiding beneath those shrubs that would break me. Rain would push me over, then race to the bottom and disappear before Briggs or anyone else could catch her. Her knife came to my side. She nudged my arm, sending another wave of searing pain through my body as she eased in close, her voice a whisper in my ear. Think you'll fly, little bird? Fuck you, I whimpered. Let's find out. Her knife left my side and her free hand pressed between my shoulder blades, ready to shove. She was fast, but I was ready. Summoning every ounce of my strength, I twisted away, my feet sliding on the dirt path. My arms were heavy and my legs tired, but I managed to kick at the back of her knee, forcing her off balance. God damn you, she shouted, but I was already moving, stumbling to my feet and pushing my legs to run. I will catch you, she threatened, the sound of her footsteps close behind. Her hand reached out and brushed my hair. I slipped, skidding more than running, but the momentum was in the right direction as I rounded a slight curve. A new light flickered in the distance. Headlights. I pushed faster, harder. If I could just get to the bottom, Briggs would... Rain's hand clamped on my scalp. One of her fingers slid into the sticky, slick gash above my temple, and the pain was so blinding there wasn't anything to do but slow and fight. I whirled on her, my knee raised. Years of training came to my rescue. My kick snapped fast right into her stomach. I wasn't dying today. I had things to live for. I had to move into Griffin's house. I had to learn how to ride Jupiter. I had to spend more sunsets in his rocking chair and nights curled in his bed. Rain grunted but kept her balance. She swung out with the knife slicing toward my belly. I dodged, barely, my footing unsteady. My second attempt at a kick missed her hip by inches. And when she swept the knife again, her strike was true. Agony erupted through my stomach. Red seeped through my shirt, hot and wet. When? Griffin's voice sang through my mind. No! Rain stabbed again, the blade sinking into my side. I gasped, the pain blending with the rest. She took my wrist and pulled hard, dragging me past her body in an attempt to fling me over the edge. I dropped to a knee, my skin tearing against a rock. When? Griff's voice rang through my mind again. Or maybe it was Briggs. Rain's gaze flickered over my head to the base of the trail. I followed her eyes, twisting as best I could. The headlights, the voice, he was here. Fight. I gritted my teeth, squaring my shoulders and planting my toes beneath me. Then I shot forward like a spring and slammed my shoulder into her ankles. Rain stumbled, and then it was her time to fly. Over the edge, her screams dying at the first clash with a rock. Then there was silence. Sweet silence as I collapsed onto the ground, tilting my gaze to those swirling stars. When? Griffin's voice came louder and louder. Then he was there, picking me up. You found me, I whispered. He shifted, digging into his jeans for a pocket knife. One flick and the tie at my wrists was gone. I tried to lift an arm to touch his cheek, but I didn't have the strength.
When? Baby, stand up. We need to get you to a hospital.
I sagged against him as his arm wrapped beneath my shoulders.
Oh, fuck.
His hand pressed into the wounds on my stomach.
Okay, I'm going to carry you.
He made the move to stand, and the pain that lanced through my body conjured one more scream.
Fuck, this will hurt. You have to stick it out for me, okay?
He looked up the trail.
Briggs, coming! Hurry!
Briggs could hurry. Griffin could run. But I wouldn't make it. He might carry me down this mountain and drive into town, but Rain had won. There were words to say, apologies to make, promises to ask him to make. But in the end, I had no time. I love you.
No, Wynn, don't say it.
He shook me as he stood. His boots began pounding down the trail.
Stay awake.
Say it back, just once so I can hear it.
No.
Griffin, my voice cracked. Please. He didn't slow.
I love you, fuck, but I love you.
Thank you. Then I let out one more breath, and the stars vanished.
Chapter 23. Griffin. Wake up, baby. My lips brushed against her knuckles. Why isn't she waking up? She lost a lot of blood, Talia said. I can't lose her. I clutched Wynn's hand. I can't. The lump in my throat that had been there for 3 days felt like a noose around my neck. You should get some sleep. Talia put her hand on my shoulder. Get out of this chair and walk around at least. I shook my head. I'm not leaving her. Griff, I'm not leaving. Talia sighed. Can I bring you anything? Coffee. Okay. She squeezed my shoulder, then slipped out of the room. She wasn't the only person who'd tried convincing me to go home. My parents, my siblings, Covey, the nurses, the doctors, everyone was trying to get me to disconnect. To let go of her hand. Because there was a real chance that she wasn't going to wake up. She hadn't once since I'd carried her off Indigo Ridge. Come on, Wynn. Wake up, I whispered against her skin. It felt too cold, and she looked too pale in the bed. The gash on her head had been stitched, the blood cleaned from her face and hair. But her lips were this ugly gray shade, her eyelids blue and her cheeks hollow. We have so much ahead of us. But I need you to wake up. In the days that I'd been here, I'd begged her countless times, because maybe if she could just hear my voice. Find your way back to me, please. You can't leave me yet. There was so much I had to tell her, so much good she'd done that she deserved to celebrate. Winslow, I closed my eyes. I love you. We've got a lifetime together. But you have to wake up, baby. You have to wake up. Find your way back to me. She didn't move. My sister brought me coffee all morning. Covey came in and sat quietly by my side through the afternoon. The nurse brought me a fresh blanket after midnight. Wynn didn't move. Until the sun began to rise on the horizon. Those beautiful blue eyes opened. Finally. And she found her way back.
Chapter 24. Winslow.
Ready?
Griff asked as we stood beside his truck. I clasped my hand with his. Ready. We walked side by side to Melina Green's front door. My pace was slow and awkward. Everything over the past 2 weeks had been slow and awkward, but it gave me time to study her yard as we walked. Her flower beds were overflowing with purple coneflower blooms. The lawn had been recently mowed, and the scent of grass filled my nose. Robins chirped as they landed in the large oak tree that shaded part of her house. A fresh morning, a new day. Before Griff could knock, the door opened and Melina stepped outside. Her face was alight with gratitude. Hi, I smiled. Hi. Her eyes turned glassy, and then she was there, hugging me too tight. It hurt. My shoulder had been dislocated, and only yesterday I'd stopped wearing the sling. But I didn't dare flinch. I simply squeezed Griffin's hand because he'd been helping me bear the pain for the past 2 weeks. Melina held me for a long moment, until Griffin must have realized I was hurting because he put his hand on her shoulder.
Should we go inside?
Of course. She let me go, wiping the tears away, and waved us inside. Sunlight streamed through the bay window in her living room. Griffin and I sat on the smooth leather couch, his arm going behind my shoulders the moment I was down so I could lean into his side. My body was healing, but it wasn't happening as fast as I'd like. He'd tried to convince me to put this visit off for another week and spend yet another day resting at home. But it was time to get back to life. Living was precious, every moment. If the night at Indigo Ridge had taught me anything, it was to make the most of my time on this earth. For a first major excursion out of the house, visiting Melina was exactly the way to start. How are you feeling? She asked, taking the chair across from the couch. Can I get you anything? No, thanks, and I'm okay. This guy has been taking good care of me. Griffin leaned over and kissed my hair.
When she listens, she's not the best patient.
I elbowed him in the ribs. The fast movement caused a stitch of pain, and I grunted.
See what I mean?
He teased. Thank you for coming over. Melina looked to the fireplace mantle, crowded with framed photos of her daughter. And for everything you've done for Lily. I was just doing my job. No, she gave me a sad smile. You did so much more. In the past 2 weeks, numerous suicide cases had been reopened and their files flooded with new information. Frank had been arrested the night Rain had tried to kill me, and his confession had shocked the entire community. 4 of the 7 suicides in the past decade hadn't been suicides. He'd been having an affair with each of those young women, and each had been murdered by his wife. Frank had mastered secrets and deception, somehow convincing the women to keep their trysts a secret. He was a charismatic man, good-looking. I didn't fault those girls for falling for his act. I only wished one of them had left a breadcrumb, or that the former chief had pushed harder to find one. Now that we knew where to look, evidence was pouring in. Frank would meet each of the women at hotels in neighboring towns. Credit card receipts showed that he'd paid for their nights together. They'd communicated by paper notes, never signed, but his handwriting had been easily matched. Lily Green had kept a few of the notes. Melina had found them when she'd finally worked up the courage to clean her daughter's room. The notes had been hidden beneath Lily's mattress. Maybe if I'd pushed her to look sooner, I would have recognized Frank's handwriting. He'd dropped those notes to Lily at his trips to the bank. Harmony Hart had worked at a restaurant in town, and he'd admitted to leaving her messages on the backs of his receipts. There was more to uncover, but the gist of it was all over town. Frank would sneak his affairs, fooling everyone but Rain, and when she'd finally snap, there would be a death. Rain's first victim had died of an overdose. She'd lived alone, and it was believed that Rain had broken in and forced her to take the pills. Frank hadn't known the specifics, and Rain wasn't alive to ask. Apparently, the overdose hadn't been enough of a punishment for Frank, so Rain had switched her tactics.
I still can't believe it. Melina shook her head. Rain used to volunteer at the nursing home. She'd come in and do painting classes with the residents. She always seemed like such a sweet woman.
You weren't the only one who was fooled. She'd fooled me my entire life. Pops, too. He'd taken this hard. Pops had loved Frank and Rain. Truly. He'd believed they were family, and this betrayal had hit him so hard that he'd decided to move. After decades of living in the house that had been my grandmother's, that had been my father's, Pops was moving. He couldn't bear to live next door to the Nigel house. So he was taking mine. Griffin had gone over yesterday to collect the rest of my things. Most of the furniture I'd bought was going to charity. There were a few families in the area who'd fallen on hard times, and if my furniture could give them a pick-me-up, then I was happy to give it away. It wasn't like I needed it at Griff's house. Our house. Melina's jaw clenched.
What will happen to Frank?
He's being charged as an accessory to murder. His lawyer might encourage him to plead not guilty, but he will go to prison. His confession was going to work against him. He'd likely say that it had been coerced or was given under duress. There was nothing to do but wait and let it play out in court. But I had confidence in my officers. Mitch had been the one to respond to the call that horrible night. Pops had stayed with Frank to ensure the bastard hadn't tried to skip town. Meanwhile, Griffin had taken a gamble and raced to Indigo Ridge, calling Briggs along the way. If not for them both, I would have suffered Rain's fate.
I think I hate him more than I hate her, Melina said. Maybe that's a strange way to see it, but he knew. He knew she'd killed and he kept having his affairs.
It's not strange, because I felt the same way.
I'm glad she's dead. Melina's eyes widened when she realized what she'd said. Sorry.
Don't be,
Griffin said.
You're not the only one.
He hadn't said much about Rain since that night. He'd told me that her body had been found on the side of the mountain, her neck broken from the fall. Otherwise, he'd stayed quiet. Too quiet. There was fury in his gaze, a flame so hot it burned the same shade as those stunning blue irises. The rage had surfaced a few times in the past few weeks, mostly when I'd been in pain. He'd clench his jaw, he'd ball his fists, he'd keep it in check until I was feeling better. Then he'd call his mom or one of his sisters to come and hang out with me while he went for a hard ride on Jupiter. Thank God for that horse. He'd helped get Griff through the past 2 weeks. But sooner or later, we'd have to talk about what had happened.
Have you spoken to the other parents?
Melina asked. Not yet. You're my first visit. The others I'd go see once I was back to work at the station, but I had another 2 weeks of rest at home. The surgery to repair the stab wounds had gone well, but combined with the concussion, my body had been through a major ordeal. The doctors had needed to restart my heart on the operating table.
I can't imagine how they're feeling. Melina dropped her gaze to her lap. To think for so many years that they're girls. I'm just glad to have the truth.
I'm sorry you lost her.
Me too.
Her eyes were brimming with unshed tears.
Even with time, there were wounds that would never heal. A tear dripped down Melina's cheek, then another. She cast her gaze once more to the photographs of her beautiful daughter.
We'll get out of your hair.
Griffin stood first, holding out a hand to help me to my feet. We said goodbye to Melina, leaving her to find whatever peace possible, and climbed into Griffin's truck. The moment the door was closed, I let out the breath I'd been holding.
You okay?
He asked, sliding behind the wheel. Just tired.
That's enough for one day.
I wanted to visit Pops, see how the packing is going.
It's going fine. He knows where to find us. You were taking a nap.
I frowned, but had learned in the past 2 weeks that arguing was pointless. So I relaxed into the seat as Griffin drove us home.
I'm proud of you.
He reached over and lifted a hand off my lap, bringing it to his lips.
You never gave up, even when we all told you to drop it. Maybe if I hadn't.
This isn't your fault. He looked over and the pain in those eyes shot straight to my heart.
I thought I'd lost you.
You didn't.
But
he swallowed hard, his Adam's apple bobbing. Then he drove in silence, taking us home. 3 cars crowded the space next to my Durango. 1 belonged to Harrison, the other Pops, the third Briggs. So much for that nap.
They get 10 minutes,
Griff said.
Then I'm kicking them out.
No, let them stay. It filled my heart that so many people had come to check on me, on us. Griff stared at the back of Briggs's truck, making no move to go inside. What? I asked.
For a while, I worried it was him, that he'd done something and blacked it out.
Briggs had come every day since I'd been released from the hospital, each time with a bouquet of flowers. I'd be forever grateful that he'd found his way to the hiking trail in the dark. He saved my life.
He did.
If his dementia gets worse, if he needs help, we're moving him in.
Yes, into Mom and Dad's house.
Griffin nodded.
They talked about it. They're going to start having him down more, checking on him more. When it's time, they'll move him to their place.
We have room.
So do they, and I get you to myself for a while.
Okay, I whispered. His shoulders slumped. His eyes stayed glued to the windshield as the air conditioner blew through the cab. I rested my head against the seat, reaching over to slide my hand down his arm. Hey, I'm okay, Griff.
Yeah.
He cleared his throat, then jumped into action, shutting off the truck and hopping out, rounding the hood to get my door. Whatever he was feeling was locked away because we had company and it wasn't the time. The guys were all inside when we walked through the door. Pops wrapped me in a gentle hug before guiding me to the living room to sit. Briggs had brought another bouquet of flowers, daisies today. Harrison had brought one of Anne's cherry pies. Between Anne, Knox, and Lila, we had enough food in the fridge to feed the entire Eden family for a week. Our family stayed for an hour, mostly talking to Griffin about the goings-on at the ranch and what was happening in town. After lunch, when my eyelids began to droop, Griffin kicked them out, but not before they helped make a dent in the food and the pie. I yawned twice before Griff lifted me from the couch and carried me to bed. I can walk.
I can carry you.
Fine. I leaned against his shoulder, breathing in his spicy scent before he set me down beside the bed, pulling away the covers to tuck me in. My head was on the pillow when he crouched down to kiss my hair.
I'm going to head out for a quick ride.
No, you're not. I caught his wrist before he could run away. You're going to come to bed, too.
You'll rest better if I'm not here.
Not true, and you know it. Lie with me, please. He blew out a frustrated breath, but he didn't deny me. Griff stood and kicked off his boots, then unbuckled his belt so it wouldn't dig into my back. Then he eased onto the mattress, carefully sliding one arm beneath my pillow, inching close until his chest was flush with my spine. But he didn't hold me. He hadn't held me since I'd come home from the hospital. Put your arm around me.
I don't want to hurt you.
I'm okay, Griff.
I'm
okay. Please don't pull away from me. I'll drag you back if I have to, but it'll hurt. He sighed and buried his face in my hair. Then, slowly, his arm wound around my waist, resting against the spot where the bandages were gone, but the stitches remained. See? I twisted, the move causing a bit of a sting, but I shoved it down. Don't carry this on your own. Don't shut me out. His frame slumped against mine.
It rocked me.
Me too.
The idea of you going back to work, just a worry. I've never felt this kind of fear before. It's making me unsteady.
Then we lean on each other. We worry about each other. But we can't let it run our lives. I'm okay.
You're okay.
He breathed, pulling me closer. Good. I burrowed into his arms. Now kiss me. He barely grazed the corner of my mouth. A real kiss.
When?
Kiss me, Griffin. He frowned, but obeyed, his lips lingering against mine. Stubborn, I mumbled before dragging my tongue against his lower lip until finally he kissed me like I wanted to be kissed, breaking away when we were both breathless. I love you. He touched the freckles on my nose.
I love you.
After our nap, can we do something?
Depends. What do you want to do?
I smiled. You owe me a first date. Epilogue. Winslow. 1 year later.
Hey, baby,
Griffin answered.
Having fun?
Don't even start, I muttered. You know I hate traffic duty. He laughed.
You volunteered?
Because I'm trying to be a good boss.
The chief of police doesn't need to man the speed traps.
We don't have speed traps, Griffin.
Sure,
he deadpanned.
So you're not parked behind the bush off the highway at the John Deere dealership?
Not anymore. I glanced in my rear view at the bush and the dealership. What are you guys doing?
We're getting ready to go for a ride around the ranch.
By ride, you'd better mean in a truck and not on Jupiter. Griff had made a comment this morning that Hudson was old enough to start riding with him on the horse. I thought he was joking. He'd better have been joking. My baby was not getting on a horse. Not yet.
He's gotta learn sometime.
Griffin, I warned. He's 2 months old, my husband chuckled.
Yes, we're riding around in the truck.
Good. Have fun.
I'm going to swing by Mom and Dad's. Say hi. See how Briggs is settling into the loft at the barn.
Give them all a hug for me. Maybe two for Briggs. Briggs had moved in last week. It had been Mateo's idea to have Briggs closer to Harrison and Anne, but since Briggs didn't want his cabin to sit empty, they'd traded homes. Mateo was now in the mountains while Briggs was closer to family. In the past year, he'd started on some medication that seemed to help, but every now and again he'd have an episode where his mind would falter and he'd lose time and place. The worst incident had happened a month ago, prompting this move. Briggs had gone hiking and gotten lost. When Griffin and Harrison had gone out to find him, he'd gotten combative with them both, not having a clue who either of them was. When Harrison had told Briggs later what had happened, Briggs had made us all promise that if he acted like that again, they'd put him in a home. Mateo had suggested the barn loft as an alternative. We hoped that maybe if Briggs was living closer to the place where he'd grown up as a child, it would give him more of a foundation. None of us knew what would happen, but it was worth a try. Will you take your mom's pie plate when you go? I asked.
It's already loaded.
In the background, my son whimpered. How's Hudson doing?
He's ready for a nap. We'll drive around, let him conk out in his seat, then head to Mom's.
I checked the clock on the cruiser's dash. 4 hours to go, then I'll be home.
We'll be waiting. Love you.
Love you too. I ended the call and continued driving toward Maine. Technically, I was still on maternity leave. I had 3 weeks left. But we'd been a bit short on staff for the past few months, ever since I'd fired Tom Smith. Pregnancy had zapped my patience. So even though I was supposed to be at home, I'd been covering a few shifts to lighten the load at the station until we could get another officer hired. The tourist traffic had lessened considerably this past week now that the school year had begun. It was nice to see a few empty spaces downtown, though soon there'd be hunters and then the Christmas crowd. Quincy during the holidays was magical. Though I was biased. Memories of childhood Christmases here with Pops and my parents were some of my fondest, and this past year had been unforgettable. Griffin and I had gotten married 3 days before Christmas. The ceremony had been a small, intimate affair at the Eloise Inn.
He'd dazzled in a black suit. I'd worn my mother's wedding dress. After Pops had walked me down the aisle and Griffin and I had exchanged vows, we'd opened the hotel's doors for a reception that had strained the building's seams. Most of the guest rooms had been reserved for family, and for the first time ever, I'd stayed at the Eloise. Griffin and I had locked ourselves in the best suite for 3 days. Ours was the last wedding hosted at the Eloise before the renovations had started. Harrison and Anne had bought the building next door and annexed it to the hotel for events, and the restaurant no longer resembled an open dining room, but a trendy, upscale steakhouse. When I'd been pregnant with Hudson, Griff and I had gone down 3 times a week because my cravings had been out of control. Knox had been like a magician, always making exactly what I hadn't even known I'd wanted. We hadn't planned to get pregnant so soon, but after the incident on Indigo Ridge, my birth control had been interrupted and we'd decided not to bother. Life was short. Griffin and I were going to live it to the fullest, and this family we were making together was the light of my life. My hand drifted to my belly. Maybe we'd visit the restaurant as often this time around, too. My children would be less than a year apart. Hopefully, that meant they'd be close friends, if not when they were little, then when they were older. I reached the end of Maine and headed down the highway. Traffic was light, and most cars I passed would do a little dip, their fenders dropping as they tapped their brakes. 10 miles later, I was about to turn around and head back to town when I spotted a gray sedan with New York plates pulled over on the side of the road. Slowing, I eased onto the shoulder and flipped on the cruiser's light bar so other cars would give us some space. Then I made sure I had my sidearm on my hip before I got out and approached the car. Griffin had insisted I wear a vest when I was on patrol duty. It was hot on top of my black blouse, but my husband worried, so I wore the vest. The driver's side window of the sedan was down, and the sound of a baby crying hit me first. That unmistakable sound twisted my heart. So did the sound of a woman sobbing as hard as the infant. Hello? The woman behind the wheel didn't hear me. Miss, I called. She gasped and practically jumped out of her seatbelt. Sorry, I held up my hands.
Oh my God,
she slapped one hand to her heart while the other tucked a lock of blonde hair out of her face.
I'm sorry, officer, I can move my car.
It's all right. I leaned to peek inside. Is everything okay? She nodded and wiped furiously at her face, trying to dry the tears.
Just a bad day. Actually, a really bad day. Maybe the 5th worst day of my life. 6th, no, 5th. We've been in the car for days and my son won't stop crying. He's hungry, I'm hungry. We need a nap and a shower, but I'm lost. I've been driving around for 30 minutes trying to find this place where we're supposed to be staying.
Where are you going? I asked, casting my eyes to the back seat. Her baby continued to wail, his face red and his tiny fists clenched. She reached for a sticky note, holding it up.
Juniper Hill.
Juniper Hill? Only one person lived on that gravel road.
Yes, do you know where it is?
She tossed her hand toward the windshield.
My directions led me right here, but there isn't a road marked Juniper Hill, or any road marked, period.
Montana country roads rarely are marked, but I can show you.
Really?
The hope in her sad eyes broke my heart. It was like this woman hadn't had a helping hand in a long, long time. Of course, I held out my hand. I'm Winslow.
Memphis.
The name didn't surprise me. Eloise had been uttering it for weeks. Knox had been grumbling it for just as long. Welcome to Quincy, Memphis.
Thank you.
She breathed, and a new wash of tears cascaded down her cheeks. I hurried to my cruiser, then led the way to Juniper Hill. 4 hours later, after I'd traded out the cruiser for my Durango, I was home. Griffin was rocking Hudson on the porch, a bottle held to my son's mouth.
Hey, how'd it go?
Good. I took the chair next to him and waved for him to hand me my boy. When he was nestled in the crook of my arm, I breathed. Hudson had my dark blue eyes, but otherwise I hoped he'd resemble Griffin. He already had his father's thick brown hair, and even at only 2 months old, he had Griffin's steady nature. He'd rarely screamed, unlike Memphis's son, Drake. Remember that girl Eloise hired to work at the hotel? Memphis Ward? The one who was moving here from New York?
Yeah.
I met her today. She got lost trying to find Knox's house. Her son is about the same age as Hudson, but not as cute.
No child is as cute as Hudson.
Exactly. I pulled the empty bottle from my son's mouth and lifted him to my shoulder, kissing his cheek as I patted his back. She seemed sweet, a little frazzled, but I guess we all are on our bad days. Griffin shook his head and chuckled.
I still can't believe that Eloise convinced Knox to let a stranger live above his garage. He's gonna go nuts. The whole point of him building that house on a nowhere road was to avoid people.
Eloise had been struggling to find dependable employees at the inn lately, and when Memphis had applied, she'd been so far overqualified that Eloise had assumed it was a joke. Though she'd done a virtual interview, and when Memphis had accepted the job, Eloise had been thrilled. Only a week later, after trying to find an apartment and coming up dry, Memphis had called Eloise to back out of the job. Except my sister-in-law wasn't one to be deterred by roadblocks. She'd convinced Knox to let Memphis stay at his place for a few months until a new rental opened up in town. Memphis was going to be renting the studio apartment Knox had built above his garage. The apartment was intended for company because he didn't want to have people crash in his guest rooms like they did when they came to visit us.
Your sister should be the next mayor, Griffin chuckled.
Speaking of mayors,
a familiar blue Bronco came rolling down the road with Pops behind the wheel. Since he'd retired earlier in the year, he made it a point to visit a few times a week and spoil his great-grandson.
He's going to steal you from me, I told Hudson, and I just got home.
He's not alone.
Griffin nodded to the road again, and sure enough, a line of cars came our way.
I guess we're hosting dinner.
Hours later, after Anne and Lila had cooked for us all, the house was full of laughter. Pops and Harrison were watching a football game. Talia, Mateo, and Eloise were on the deck. Knox hadn't made it over, probably because he was at home stewing about his temporary neighbor. Griffin and I were on the couch, cuddled together as our son slept in his father's arms.
Should we tell them?
He asked. I looked into those bright blue eyes and nodded. Yeah.
Gather around,
he called, and when the living room was packed with family, he grinned.
Family announcement.
Family. His. Mine. Ours. And 8 months later, our daughter, Emma Eden, joined the fray.
Bonus epilogue. Griffin. Ready, buddy? Hudson gripped the rope to the sled.
Ready, Daddy?
I lifted my boots from the snow and planted a hand, shoving us down the hill. My three-year-old son's laugh was music to my ears as we flew down the slope, the glittering flakes blowing into our faces. Wynne held Emma propped on a hip at the bottom while she tracked us with her phone, the camera capturing every moment until we skidded to a stop.
Again!
Hudson struggled to climb out of the sled in all his winter gear. Like his sister, he was bundled in bibs and a puffy coat. The stocking hat on his head had drifted too far down his forehead, and he had to tip his chin back to see. Let's fix this hat. I pulled off my gloves, folding back the hem of his hat, then giving my boy a high five.
Me, me, me!
Emma squirmed for Wynne to set her down. Once her boots hit the ground, she toddled my way and crashed into my legs. I hoisted her up, then bent to grab the sled. One more? Wynne nodded.
Yeah, and then we'd better go. Pops is coming over in an hour, and I need to get dinner in the oven.
Okay, baby. I brushed a kiss to my wife's lips, then carted my daughter up the hill. One more run turned into two. Hudson's pout won me over, and despite the setting sun, I hauled him and his sister up the hill for our final sled ride before loading them into the truck to drive home.
That was fun,
Wynne spun and smiled at the kids in the back.
We should go again tomorrow.
You got it. If sledding made my wife and kids smile, then I'd take them every day. We'd find the time. Our two kids kept us running from sunrise to sunset, and often the hours in between. The ranch was thriving. Wynne was the community's beloved chief of police. Life was a blast. This was a happy I hadn't even realized possible. All because of the woman I'd met at Willie's. the woman who'd seduced me in the back seat of this truck. It was overdue for a trade-in, but I couldn't bring myself to part with it. Turns out I was a bit sentimental when it came to my wife.
Let's do baths before dinner,
she said as we unloaded the kids and started stripping off the winter layers.
Then if Pop stays late, we can just put the kids to bed.
I've got him.
Thanks, baby.
She gave me a kiss, then retreated to the kitchen, her beautiful face flushed from the cold. I'd put in some work later tonight to give her cheeks that same color. I'd be using my tongue. The kids were both wrapped in hooded towels when I heard Covey's voice carry from the hallway. The kids heard him too.
Pops!
Hudson led the charge, the towel flying like a cape over his shoulders as he raced for the door. Emma was right on her brother's heels, racing into Covey's open arms. Neither of them noticed Janice standing by, watching on. Hey, Covey. I held out a hand for a shake, then nodded to Janice. Hi, Janice.
Hi, Griff.
Welcome. I waved them both into the house, wondering why Wynn's assistant was here, and why Covey had his fingers laced through hers as they came into the living room. Wynn emerged from the hallway that led to our bedroom, having changed into a long-sleeved tee. One look at Covey and Janice's hands clasped, and her feet stuttered to a stop.
Hi.
Hi, sweetheart. Covey pulled Janice to the couch, the pair of them sitting without a centimeter in between.
You said you told them I was coming.
Janice shot Covey a glare from behind those red-framed glasses. Decided a little surprise might be the best way to tackle this.
Tackle what exactly?
Wynn came into the living room, Emma walking over, still wrapped in her unicorn towel. How about we put some clothes on these kids, then we can talk, I suggested. Wynn picked up Emma while I chased Hudson down the hall to their respective rooms. When they were both dressed in pajamas, we returned to the living room to find Janice and Covey still on the couch. I flipped on a cartoon for the kids, then sat in the chair across from the new couple, waiting as Wynn perched on its edge. So, you two are dating?
Engaged,
Covey corrected, holding up Janice's left hand. Sure enough, a diamond ring glittered beside her knuckle. Wynn's jaw dropped.
You're engaged?
Janice winced and jammed her elbow into Covey's ribs.
In my defense, I never liked keeping this a secret, but someone was worried that it might cause problems at the station.
What? How? When?
With each question, Wynn's voice grew louder. I put my hand on her knee. Let's start with congratulations. Her mouth opened and closed, then opened again. Nothing came out. I'm sorry for keeping this a secret, Winnie, Covey said with a grin. But it was actually sort of fun to sneak around like we're kids, me and the younger woman.
Oh my God,
Janice groaned.
You're making it worse.
I laughed. How long have you two been together?
5 months,
Covey answered. I just proposed this morning.
5 months?
Wynn shot off the chair.
I'm sorry,
Janice stood too.
It just started as a little fling and then it became more. You know how that goes, but I love the old fart and we have so much fun together. Now that I'm retiring next month and we're engaged, I hoped that maybe you'd give us your blessing.
Of course she will. Covey stood and walked to Wynn, putting both hands on her shoulders. She makes me happy. She keeps me feeling young. I love the hell out of her. Wynn stared at him for a long moment. Then the shock disappeared. Because I knew my wife. And she loved so deeply that she'd never deny her grandfather a sliver of happiness. A soft smile pulled at her beautiful mouth. She stood on her toes and pressed a kiss to Covey's cheek. Then she stepped past him and pulled Janice into a hug.
Congratulations, and welcome to the family.
That's my girl, I grinned. The rest of the night was a flurry of questions. I loved that about my wife. Her curious mind, her thirst to understand. Emma and Hudson had that too. Most 2- and 3-year-olds were curious, but I saw the same spark in their eyes that I loved in their mothers. By the time Covey and Janice left for the night, the kids were tucked into their beds. The stars were shining in the winter sky, and the full moon cast its silver rays over the snow-covered trees and meadows. Wynn and I stood at the window, watching the Bronco's headlights disappear.
I sort of love them together,
she said. I sort of love them together, too. She dropped her head to my shoulder.
I love you.
I love you. I turned her, framing her face in my hands. The flush is gone from your face.
What flush?
From sledding.
Oh, she laughed, because I'm not freezing my ass off.
I dropped my mouth to hers. I like the flush.
Yeah?
I swept her up in a fast move, tossing her over my shoulder. Then I smacked her ass as she giggled on the walk to the bedroom, where I earned back the flush. Thank you for listening to Indigo Ridge, written by Devney Perry, narrated by Jason Clark and Vanessa Edwin, both members of SAG-AFTRA. Produced by One Night Stand Studios. Post-production by Michael Straza. Text copyright 2021 by Devney Perry, LLC. Production copyright 2021 by Devney Perry, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.